Hey everyone, and welcome back to Purple Row Radio. This edition is for the week of September the 12th through the 16th. My name is Greg Stanwood. I am a staff writer at PurpleRow.com. I'm here along with the managing editor of Purple Row, Andrew Martin. Andrew, how's it going?
Oh, I'm doing okay. Nothing too crazy going on. Just sitting here watching the Brewers-Rockies game, and it's the 11th inning now. Or no, it's the bottom of the 10th.
Yeah, for once, we were trying recording in the middle of a game again. so that'll be fun. We'll see. I mean, we're already in extras, so, you know, the idea is, you know, probably not going to be too much more of the game, but sometimes you never know. It could be 22 innings, and we'll, who knows.
Man, if it gets much longer here, I'm probably going to put on a movie, just keep track of the score.
You can split screen it, put the game on in the corner.
I could, yeah, that'd be a way to be a little picture-in-picture beyond the game. That wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess with not much off-topic to discuss this time, let's move right into baseball stuff, where we have 16 games left, I believe, in the 2011 season, and everybody, of course, now that we are officially eliminated from the division, and probably the wild card is, I know this as of this morning we weren't, but I don't really know the exact number there, but I mean, point being, we don't even have a miracle run left anymore. And so,
a lot of teams would have to completely lose out, and we would have to win out to make any kind of miracle run happen.
Yeah, and I mean a miracle run. Like, the kind of thing that would be absurd even for a Hollywood film.
Yeah, it would be, yeah, this is the kind of thing where you can't lose, like literally cannot lose, or else math works against you and things like that. So, I mean, in 2007, we could at least, you know, every time we lost, it's like, oh, well, season's over, good try, season's over, good try. But then there's like only the one loss we actually could have in there. And then it was like, wow.
Yeah.
We still ended up winning out, you know, except for that one game, obviously. But in this case, they would have to win out and everyone else would have to pretty much lose out. So.
Yeah, and again, division is out now. It's mathematically impossible.
Exactly. So. This is just talking the wild card. And that means the Braves, the Giants, the, Cardinals, and I don't know, some of the team. They all have, oh, the Mets, they all, man, I just realized that we have a worse record than the Mets. That just makes me sad. We're all laughing at them at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and
off and just destroying them in New York to start the season, and then just kidding.
Oh, sad times. What a disappointing few months. Well, anyway, you know, everybody's attention is going to be now turned to what's going to go on in the off season, but we've decided that at this point we're going to save the off season discussion for the off season. So we want to just spend a quick show here talking about our impressions from some of the new faces that we've seen on the team, and you know, just try and maybe focus on what they're contributing now and what they could contribute later, and so on and so forth. I want to start. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's just kind of weird having a September like this. We haven't had one of these in quite a while. I mean, at least it hasn't. We've obviously made call ups, but to have, like, you know, second spring training of a September is something we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, this reminds me of the 2006 spring training.
Yep,
or not spring training, September, which was the first one that I saw, obviously. And, you know,
Aldo made his major league debut then, and
Tulowitzki, Iannetta made their debuts.
Yes.
And
Stewart and Hawtay had that beastly season, and then they were able to do we have any other pitchers come up? I feel like, oh, I can't think of it now. Mike, not Cool Blah, it's Mike, he had a name of a hockey player, and I can't for the life of me remember who it was. I could have sworn he came from 2004. It's not important, though.
2004?
Sorry. I got this, my mind is like in a million places trying to figure out who this,
what'd you say his name was?
It's Mike something, and it's driving me nuts. He has the same name as a hockey player. And
the only pitchers I remember were like Nate Field and that one guy who was with Oakland for a while.
Joe Kennedy?
No. He was a reliever.
Jay Witasic.
No, not that guy either. I'm going to try and look it up and keep the discussion going at the same time. But anyway, the other call-up I wanted to mention was Jeff Baker that year, who was not making his debut, but he was his first real chance to audition. And it was just, it kind of goes along the same lines of what we're looking
Mike
at.
Mike Esposito, that's who it was. Mike Esposito, and he pitched in 2005, so.
Okay, so
my,
yeah.
My bad on that.
Now who, it's right on the tip of my tongue. Let's see if I got his name right. Yeah, Justin Hampson. That's what it was.
I remember that guy.
Yeah, he went to San Diego and then went to Oakland and then is now pitching in the minor system for the Mets.
Huh.
There you go.
I think he, I can't remember if some part of him got, like, if he blew out his shoulder or something like that. I seem to only have their memory of, you know, completely injury prone.
Huh. Well, yeah, I mean, that was back in the days when I really didn't know much about minor league baseball. So, I mean, he was a 28th round draft pick for the Rockies in 1999. And, you know, at that point, I didn't know anything about the minor league system. So, hey, some new guy is on the team. You know, back then, it's funny how far I've come in my understanding of this stuff. But back then, I probably didn't even know there was a roster expansion, let alone how it worked.
One thing that's kind of interesting about the 2006 season, and we can get off that pretty quick here. I just made this observation while we were going through all our numbers, or looking at the call-ups then, but we had five pitchers make all but like nine or 10 of our starts. Aaron Cook, Jason Jennings, Jeff Francis, Josh Fogg, and Byung-Hyun Kim.
Ah, yes. That was a very stable rotation that year. And
it was shockingly stable. I mean, you wouldn't expect it from I mean, granted, a lot of their numbers sucked, but when you make some park accounts, we had three above average pitchers in that lineup.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, just kind of a funny memory, a wild lineup too. Byung-Hyun Kim, actually, it wasn't that bad. He was probably one of the better pitchers in the rotation.
He certainly had good outings, and of course Fogg did as well. I go back to that Seattle start.
Oh yeah. It's always funny looking back on the old teams, especially Jason Jennings, and realizing just how mediocre he was. But we didn't know what was capable now. I mean, we had the humidor, but all we knew was that
he must have seemed really good for a Rockies pitcher, especially one that was homegrown.
Yeah, 3.78 ERA over the course of a season, pitching 212 innings. I just he was the ace in 2006, the ace, a 3.78 ERA. He's the ace. And you just kind of look at the rest of his numbers, and, you know, all of them just scream mediocre. I mean, win-loss doesn't really mean much, but if that's what, you know, that's your game, he was 9-13 that year.
Mm-hmm.
He had a strikeout-to-walk ratio well under 2. Gave up, his home run rate wasn't bad, about 0.7 home runs per 9. Something like that. Anyways, it just a very mediocre year. Definitely not a bad year, but mediocre to say the least.
Yeah,
so,
but and I guess obviously looking at a pitching rotation for the Rockies from this point of view, after 5 years in which we've had several pitchers develop that are capable of putting up better numbers, it's kind of funny to look back and think, oh, those were once ace level Rockies numbers, you know.
Oh,
and of
yeah.
course, back then I was just getting started paying attention, but from my understanding, we had many years earlier in the decade in the late 90s where our ace was even worse than that. So.
Oh yeah, Pedro Stacio. Anyways, the point, there is no point. It's just kind of an interesting exploration about how perception of what Rockies pitching was capable of back in 2006 was so much different than it is today. I mean, we've had a pitcher having a sub-3 ERA, you know, in Coors Field, and that means something now, because, I mean, with all the low ERA seasons that Ubaldo's posted when he was with the Rockies, you know, we'd all argue about Jason Jennings and Aaron Cook being ace pitchers, and everyone else is just like, dude, they're not ace pitchers. Yeah, they are, but they're Coors Field ace. You gotta keep that ball on the ground, which is completely true. It just, they were far from ace pitchers.
Yeah, from any general sense, it would not match up that way if they were playing somewhere else. Whoa! I just noticed Boston scored 18 runs today.
Oh, uh-huh. They have a tendency to do that when you have an offense of all-stars.
Yeah, I suppose. Also when you're facing the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So call-ups this season.
Yes.
So,
You want to start with Pomeranz?
I think he's a great way to start.
Yeah, I mean, everybody really jumped the gun on saying that his season was done. he did make it back for that rehab start last week, 3 innings with the Drillers in their final game of the season, promoted 2 days ago now, three maybe? I can't remember how long ago that was, but, he was on a pitch count. Was it about 60 or so pitches, I think?
They were looking at 65, 70, somewhere in there. He finished at 63, getting through 5 clean innings.
I unfortunately missed the start itself. I didn't get to watch the game, so I was listening on the radio. And, I assume you did watch it.
I was there.
I knew a lot of people went as well. Just like with the Alex White start, I guess, start by naming whatever your impressions were of his demeanor and poise, just from what you are able to glean from watching the game live.
Well, for starters, one similarity is that we had the same seats, which is pretty nice.
We
StubHubbed them. I guess the people who owned them didn't care that much about them. We were sitting back behind home plate, just to the right of the press box, in the third deck, right up against the railing. And you have a good view of, especially with Pomerantz being a left-hander, you get to see his complete motion very well. As far as one other interesting thing is that Matt caught one of Tommy Field's foul balls.
That's right, and of course Field made his major league debut the same day. You said there was some story behind that, but I never saw that. What was the deal?
Oh, there was a joke on the way home. We were trying to talk about, you know, how Matt was, you know, diving over the edge to save the baby, and an eagle flew by, and I was cowering in my seat and crying, and Carlos and the cat pulled Matt back up while we were in Coors Field, and, you know, he got up, and a Mexican woman gave him a rose and burst into tears and hugged him, and the baby cried. This story just kept getting bigger and worse, and I get more, you know, craven and cowardly as the story proceeds. And yeah, I'll just let Matt, you know, continue to retell it if anyone really wants to hear it. But anyhow, as an actual game that we watched, Pomeranz looked good. Like, not great, but good. The things that were not good were just, we did see his velocity dip as he, kind of got up in pitches. Not miserably, but he dropped from 91 to 93 to 89, 90-ish. And he also admitted after the game, or someone did at least, that he was taking it easy intentionally, as far as velocity goes anyhow, you know, saving something to take home.
And of course, he's still pretty fresh off not only the timeout spent while getting the appendix removed and recovering from that, but he's still not 100%, I would assume, after sitting down for 4 weeks in between the time of the trade and the time he was able to move over here. He's probably in a little bit of a state still at this point.
Well, he got traded at the deadline, and I'm pretty sure he just had to wait till the signing deadline from last year to come. So I think that was like 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was like 2.5 weeks, I guess, the more I... Okay.
I mean, not like quibble so much, but I mean, it wasn't like a full month layoff.
You're right. I was just thinking more that, it's possible that he still is not 100% because any time I would assume you don't pitch, even if it's just for that short a time, might have at least some sort of effect on your,
absolutely. Not facing real competition when you're, you know, in a place to face competition, not like a location, but a state of being. I mean, he just kind of got pulled from the middle of the AA season over with Cleveland's organization and, came right over, had to wait 2 weeks to come over and,
was basically just hanging out and exercising at the spring training facility.
I'm sure they had him on some sort of throwing program too, but.
They did, but I think I read somewhere, it might have been on his Twitter account or maybe it was in an interview where he basically said that there were days where he would literally be working on baseball for an hour a day and would have nothing else to do.
Kind of makes you want to go hang out with a kid in Tucson, right? At least that's what I think.
Yes, give
him. Drew Pomeranz, aren't you? Oh my God, you're huge. Well, I'm like 6 years older than you, so, I don't know, man, you wanna watch a movie or something?
Yeah. Teach me how to pitch.
Yeah, exactly. Can I have some money? the good things about Pomeranz were, for starters, his velocity was pretty decent in the first. You could tell he wasn't going completely all out. I mean, nothing really explicit that I could put my finger on, but
how hard was he throwing in comparison to how hard he can or has been scouted?
He's really the kind of guy who works 93, maybe 94, maybe a little bit, maybe like 95 on good days.
Sort of the Jason Hamill range.
Yeah, kind of. That's probably a good way to put it. I'm sure he could pump a little bit more, like, you know, 96-ish, whatever, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, he's gonna work 93-ish. So, on Sunday, he only went as far as high as 93 from what I was watching. I mean, maybe he had a 94 in there. I wasn't watching that closely.
Right.
But we were more interested in his, he pitched on the black a lot. And from our angle, being up on the first base side of home plate, a little bit of the depth perception there, you just can't really tell exactly where the ball is. You get a good view on height, but not so much on whether or not it caught plate. So the ump seemed to be giving the outside corner a lot, and that was good because Pomerantz just used the outside corner all game long against right-handers.
Now, he went 5 innings, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, 5 innings. 5 innings of 2-hit ball.
And one was an infield single, yeah?
Exactly. It was this really weird play if you didn't watch the game where Kevin Kuzmanoff came diving for a tough ground ball deep in the hole and did one of those where his glove basically hits it and pushes it toward where the shortstop lined up. But the reason they called it a hit is from where it was, the ball was hit, it looked like even if Kuzmanoff had missed it and gotten to Tommy Field, he'd be so deep in the hole that he'd just have to eat the ball anyways. So, yeah, a hit, but not a hit. And then when you get to the fifth inning, he gave up another, it was either the fourth or fifth, gave up a solid single through the middle. Again, not like a 15 feet off the ground line drive kind of hit, but it was a screecher at about, that if it had been 3 feet to the left or the right, two lower alleys would have gotten to it and just caught it out of the air, but squared up ball, it didn't, you know, get that much on it. So the point being out of all this is that he did give the, Reds bats a run for their money. There's a couple balls got to the outfield that were tracked down, but he definitely had them off balance for the majority of the game, and it was very promising to see. He didn't have a great strike to ball ratio, as that is to say, it was about, the numbers were about even with like plus 5 to 10 on strikes. And yeah, we chalked that up to, you know, he just came back off the appendix surgery. He's in the majors for the first time. He's, you know, jitters, new team, all that stuff. And maybe just the umpire not being quite as generous on everything, but he did a good job working away. He didn't really go in on too many guys there, but he didn't seem to need to. And that it was just an interesting selection for location, but he worked pretty well with Rosario, and, you know, obviously the Rockies won.
Yeah, which is, you know, at this point, not necessarily important, but it did give him a victory since he lasted 5 innings. I mean, overall, yeah. The impression I got was that it was a pretty decent major league debut.
Much better than White's. Like, when White came up and made his first start, it was ground balls everywhere, but it was like watching the Keystone Cops. It just, everybody was running everywhere and missing the balls and making errors and deflecting them and, you know, he got tagged like 5 runs in that game or something like that, but like nothing left the infield. White is just having a very unfortunate start to his Rockies career. It seems he catches the, I mean, not saying that he's been pitching perfectly. He's been incredibly wild and, you know, that's a very frustrating thing to be watching, but his strikeout numbers are quasi, I mean, they're not great, but they're about where we'd expect them to be at this point. And the home run rate is that's just cartoon. That's not even real. We were at the game where he gave up 5 home runs.
And there were nine total in the game, all in the first 5 innings or so, yeah.
Like, one of those off the bat of Joey Votto, just watching from where it came from, there's no way that ball's leaving. No, it's going to be caught like 10, 15 feet in front of the fence. Nope, just kidding. It, you know, it cleared the fence. And, you know, the Bruce home run that he gave up, that crusher to club level in the outfield, that was most assuredly not a fluke. Bruce murdered that thing. But it, you know, a bunch of the other ones, it's like, how on earth are these balls getting out? And the balls are just flying that day. So far we already have a kind of a season of making excuses for Alex Waite. And I'm hoping we don't have to do that with Pomerantz. And so far it's looking like we won't, but, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
Well, now we know pretty much at this point that White is going to be penciled into that 2012 rotation just about no matter what he does as long as he's healthy. But with Pomerantz, that's still kind of up in the air. Now, do we know at this point if they're going to be starting Pomerantz on a full schedule this September, knowing that he's going to be throwing in the AFL?
I don't know for sure whether they are or not. I wouldn't be against them getting one, two more starts. I mean, the guy only has like 101 innings under his belt in his minor league career.
In his entire professional career,
exactly.
Basically.
101
yeah.
professional innings under his belt, and he's already in the majors. So, you know, especially since the number's only 101, and because he did roughly nothing when he was waiting for us to, you know, trade for him, there's room to give him some more innings. It's not going to kill him, and we're not going to go and throw another 50 innings at him somehow in the next 2 weeks.
Right. Yeah, and I certainly would agree there's not really too much concern for overworking. It's just I was uncertain if they were going to just basically not take the risk, since there's really no reason to either. It's not like having him, even when he's effective on the mound, is going to really, you know, suddenly put us back in contention or anything.
They should give him about 2 more starts. If it's much more than 2 more starts, I mean, it just depending on the schedule pans out. I haven't looked into it that closely, to be honest. He might get 3. That's no big deal, but
yeah.
And then he's going to go from there to the Arizona Fall League. So either way, he's going to get more innings. And we might as well get a look at him up here to kind of get that pre-spring training scouting report out of him.
Yeah, and also at least adjust him a little bit to some degree to the culture of pitching for a major league team. So, basically, is it safe to say at this point that how he performs in the AFL, not to mention spring training, of course, is going to probably at least factor in to some significant degree about whether or not we're going to take him along straight out of the gate or if we're going to wait a little while?
Oh, without it. I mean, right now the fact that he's getting these looks says that next year is very likely going to be the year that he gets the call one way or another, whether it's from spring training or in the middle of the season. We'll kind of have to see what obviously we'll have to wait and see. If we just sat on wait and see, though, we wouldn't have a site or a podcast. So I don't see any reason, unless he really falls apart in spring training. Looks like it might have just been a fluke or, you know, riding on adrenaline or something in the first few major league starts. They might set him down just to get a few more innings, more professional innings, period. But there's really not a strong, surefire reason for him not to start the season in the majors.
Yeah, and of course we've talked many times about the uncertainty regarding the depth of next year's rotation, especially with two of the players who would probably be in that rotation already known to be out at the beginning, at least with, earliest possible we see De La Rosa back is like June, and even that might be a little bit optimistic. And then we have Nicasio, whose future is just one big question mark at this mm-hmm. point. You know, there's a lot of places in there. We're turning down Cook's option, certainly, and Jason Hamill might be traded. I mean, there's a lot of room in there for Pomerantz to sneak his way into a rotation spot out of the gate. And so, I mean, at this point, I think the fact that he was able to get called up at this point is definitely a pretty significant, far from a guarantee with all the performance he has to put up and all the roster changes we have to make. But I think it's certainly a couple steps forward in terms of, finding a spot for him straight out of the gate in next year.
Personally, I hope he wins the job out of spring training, not for no reason other than when he comes up, if he's not completely and perfectly sharp, that, you know, people will say, you know, won't say, oh, well, Pomerantz is blah, 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 and, you know, we rushed him to the majors because we needed him to come in, rather than saying, you know, hey, he legitimately won the job in spring training. This wasn't a, oh, hey, we brought Drew Pomerantz up too early because we really, really needed him. And the entire Greg Reynolds, 2008 when he came up.
I was just gonna say Greg Reynolds. That was hard to say, if that was the single contributing factor to the derailment of his career, but
there's no way it is, but it feels like it was. You know?
It does. I mean, he's gone through injury issues and effectiveness issues, but, I mean, I think, even before I really understood the development process, the general consensus around the Colorado Rockies sort of news and fan sphere around the internet was that he was nowhere near ready to be called up. And, you know, this was back in the days where, the team was, probably more than a little bit, dry in terms of, guys to, call up beyond, prospects. The depths, they kept on were not necessarily former major league talent, like is basically what we've been stalking with AAA right now, and instead it's the Valerio de los Santos types. So, I mean, Greg Reynolds probably stood out amongst that crowd, but it just kind of does go to show you that you can cause some damage if you are too hasty with moving your pieces around the different levels like that.
And that's assuming there's still a hope for Reynolds, but I just want to throw him out as a comparison. Like, Pomerantz, if he comes up in spring training, it won't be because the team is incapable of getting in anyone else. I mean, we've seen a bit more resiliency in the team to put pitchers in the rotation, like pitchers who should be in the rotation right now, over the last couple years, at least since 2008, after that debacle where they broke Morales too, arguably, in that same process that they broke Greg Reynolds. 2008 was a bad season, dude.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, it was worse than this season. I think the way I think about it, I mean, I'm not going to make excuses for the 2011 team, but I think a lot just went wrong for this team.
Oh, yeah.
And I think 2008 less went wrong. And it was just more an overestimation of what we had after a World Series run that was really more luck than anything else. And I think this season, it's more like they tried to make a better team and just didn't do it. Whereas 2008, they were like, oh yeah, we're fine, just the way we are. We'll just do it again.
And a lot of the, you know, didn't bother changing anything. Well, they didn't this year. They were counting on kind of the wrong things in a way. They're counting on people having breakouts. And that was one of the third base pretty much being the point. Like, nothing went as planned, and the dominoes that needed to not fall fell, if that makes sense. Like, they fell in directions that they shouldn't have fallen. We had a lot of depth built up in other places. Nope, just kidding. How about third base? We're going to run you dry.
Yeah, and we were also, of course, counting on Jimenez and just a whole lot of other things to kind of re-manifest themselves in a supremely positive light. And, I mean, I don't think anybody expected Jimenez to take the turn backwards that he did this season. But even if he were decent, it's still arguable that it wouldn't have made that much of a tangible difference on the season because we were expecting, you know, flirting with 20 wins again. And I really don't know if that's ever an assumption you should make unless you're talking about really, really select few pitchers in the major leagues.
Well, the thing with Jimenez going down not being like the one thing for the season, it's true, but it's not true at the same time. Because I mean, if you fix Jimenez and he doesn't go sour, a lot of the season is still broken because of injuries and whatnot. But you know, oh well, if you know whoever else hadn't gotten hurt, hadn't taken that you know fall back, oh boy, that is whoa. Go figure, Ryan Braun walk off, huh?
Yeah, as soon as I saw him walking up there, I was just kind of thinking, yeah, this is going to end like this, isn't it?
I thought for sure the Prince Fielder was going to do it. Ah, well, if anyone's going to do it, I'm kind of glad Ryan Braun did. He's a really good baseball player.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of players on the Brewers that I quite like. And, you know, I think there's some bitterness for some people about Braun with the whole Rookie of the Year thing.
But oh, my gosh. Yeah, it sucks, but we got to get over that. We got to get over that.
And, of course, I wanted a Rocky to win, but everybody knows already I'm not like a super Tulowitzki fan, so.
Ah, well.
It's not like I took it personally.
Anyways, we were talking about call-ups.
We were. Yeah, let's, if we're done talking about Pomeranz and how he projects next year, we can talk about, you know, obviously Rosario, Pacheco have been probably getting the most regular playing time. Still haven't necessarily seen a lot in order to, have any description of them any more than perhaps their first week in the majors, but hey, that's more than nothing. So you have any impressions on those two you want to, drop on here?
Well, Pacheco so far looks more or less like we'd expect him to. It just, better than we'd expect him to. I mean, the guy's been hitting a decent amount everywhere. We saw his first home run on Saturday. Was it Saturday? Yeah, Saturday, the day the balls were all flying, yes. Pacheco's first home run there, it was a solid shot to deep center. And so it wasn't like he, you know, hit it just inside of the foul pole on the day where the balls are flying. He hit it to the deepest part of the park on a day where the balls are flying. So, you know, pretty awesome home run there. We saw a couple defensive gaffes so far, but nothing so major that we'd say this guy is out as a third baseman.
Yeah, and of course we have to point out that he was still being treated as a catcher pretty much the entire season. Uh-huh. He got very limited innings in any other role, and since he's been promoted, he's only been getting innings at third and first.
Well, what's interesting about this is if they, if they're willing to play him at first and third, does that mean they've kind of like committed to him? Maybe it's a strong way to put it, but the fact that he was a catcher and the likely reason that they kept him as a catcher was to keep his trade value high in the event that, you know, he came up being mentioned at the deadline. So now that he's up in the majors playing first and third and not catcher, I can only, you know, wonder if they're saying, hey, all right, we have a, we're going to keep this guy for next year. There's no reason to worry about his trade value anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a thought. Not much to it.
And I mean, I assume that, I mean, I actually saw a discussion about this in a comment section somewhere on the blog this past week, a bit of confusion on why did we bother keeping Pacheco at catcher for so long if we were just going to use him as a utility player all this time. Well, the idea is basically that you want to keep him at the position that he's most valuable. And, you know, when you have a catcher who can hit like that, at least who has the potential to hit like that, he's probably more valuable as a trade candidate, if he can still catch. And
I can't help but wonder if he's going to end up like Jason Kendall or something like that. Just the profile we're hearing out of him, you know, a lot of contact hitting and, you know, a decent on-base skills.
So you're saying after a 15-year career as a catcher, he's going to be signed to absurd contracts by bad teams every year?
That's the size of it.
Okay, well.
I remember when he was decent. You remember that? He used to be decent.
I remember him being decent only kind of by reputation, because back when he was a really good catcher, I was not following baseball. This was still in the 90s, sort of. Uh-huh.
He's the scrappiest catcher baseball has ever seen.
Okay, so he's the David Eckstein of catching.
Exactly. Anyways, so Pacheco, that would be kind of funny if he was a catcher of that fashion, a Jason Kendall type. But he, right now, I mean, he's not a bad option to have at second and third, or first and third, I mean, maybe second actually, but it's if you have a guy who can play those positions, but he also has catcher in his tool belt. I mean, that can give you some freedom to be able to use Rosario and Ionetta in pinch hitting situations.
Yeah, wouldn't it be interesting if we have all three of these players on the team next year once?
It's not an unrealistic situation.
No, it's really not. Yeah.
I mean, just because of the fact that they're moving him to first and third is exactly why that's such a plausible thing now. You know, you get Ionetta to, you know, get the big hit, or not even the big hit, but, you know, the magnitude, the home run, or, you know, just to get on base and much in the same fashion as Giambi, or, you know, whatever, Rosario just getting contact and not, you know, hitting it somewhere far as well. Anyways, the point is you have those two, weapons coming off the bench now, and you don't have to worry so much about not having a catcher because you have a catcher still.
Yeah, there are still teams that, I don't believe I've seen one carry a third catcher for an entire season. But I know there are teams, the Dodgers did it earlier this year for a little while. There are a couple other instances where they go at least a couple weeks with three, just to play around with it kind of. So I think that, it's a pretty significant, opportunity to have a utility player that can actually catch. And, I mean, in Pacheco's case, you know, he's to my understanding, he's not regarded as a super fantastic catcher, not a terrible catcher either, but point being, he's a capable catcher because he spent most of his professional career there after he was moved from the infield. So it's not like it's sort of catcher, quote unquote, but he would actually be a viable option there if necessary, and, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how all that shakes out. And of course, we have a lot of, we have one less now that Matt Pagnozzi was, designated for assignment, but we've still got Morales and Alfonso as likely non-tender candidates, and so our catcher situation is gonna be going from way too many catchers to, having a bunch of catchers on the roster, at least theoretically. I don't think any of those jobs are guaranteed at this point, and Iannetta still might find his way into trade talks in the off season. But yeah, I think it would be just from like a hypothetical personal standpoint. That's not necessarily, oh, this will make the team better, but it would be fun to have more opportunity to play around with Iannetta and Rosario with an extra catcher available.
You know, we just know that Jim Chase is going to keep eyeing it on the bench anyhow for whatever reason.
Well, if Rosario is here and playing well, I'm okay with that.
Oh yeah, it's just the general joke that Jim Tracy does not.
Yeah, I mean, if Eliezer Alfonso is still on the team and he's doing well, then I would still have a problem with it. But with Rosario, it's okay.
Yeah. Anyhow, Rosario, we should probably mention him before we, run out of time, which we're just about there. But anyways, Rosario's been up, just a short time, but he's been getting the majority of the starts, and he's going to continue to get the majority of the starts. So they're gonna get a solid audition on him. He crushed a double to left earlier today. It ran over Braun's head and all the way to the wall, and the way it carried, like, Braun thought he had a beat on it, was waiting for it to drop, and then it just didn't drop, and you can't help but think, the thing was hit on a line, and it just would not sit down. Rosario's got some thump in his bat. It laid he hit that ball really hard. Anyhow, he looks to be the... Miguel Olivo is still just an easy, lazy comparison. A lot of power, strong throwing arm, not great play discipline. But you get those moments you can kind of see what the kid's got in him, and it's not... It's something special. It really is. You can just kind of, first major league home run, dead center field, like 15, 20 rows up, something like that. He, just a monstrous home run. Guy's going to be hitting the ball hard for the Rockies for some time.
Mm-hmm. I hope so. And then obviously we'll see how that carries out next season. If he is starting, if he's platooning or, so on and so forth. We will, let's see, is there anyone else you want to talk about here real quick? I mean, we've only seen Thomas Field for like, what, 11, 12 innings now? And he wasn't even expected to be called up, so.
Yeah, that was a very, very much a surprise. Field is kind of what we'd expect him to be. He's a glove first utility kind of guy, so maybe he'll make something more of himself, but he's not gonna get that much playing time unless they shut Tulowitzki down.
And most importantly, he's probably not gonna make the team next season, at least not.
Probably not, no.
At least not straight away. Unless something happens and we have another welt, this drought of, it's so funny, we continue to have this scary depth of middle infielder types, in pretty much the entire layout of the organization, and yet it still seems somehow that it's the first place to dry up and show signs of needing a significant amount of sort of coverage from beneath. It's just kind of amusing that your deepest place sometimes ends up being your big trouble spot, and you have to call up Thomas Field out of nowhere to cover for it. But the MLB roster doesn't necessarily reflect the minors that way. So it always seems theoretically possible that we might be seeing more of him than we expect next season, because we're going to have like three sore hips or whatever at the same time with everybody who can play shortstop. So let's see, who else? We didn't really call up any other major significant players. I mean, we've seen Greg Reynolds plenty. We already know what he has to offer and so forth. So I think that just about covers it.
Yep, that's about all she wrote for the call-ups right there.
Yep, alright. Well, in that case, let's see, we are at 38 minutes, which is a pretty reasonable time frame. We're going to be aiming, by the way, to make the show less 1 hour material and more 30-40 minute material from this point forward, because not only is it probably easier to listen to, but also easier for us to record and edit. It won't take up so much time. So that's the plan going forward, at least for now. We're going to try to do one more show before the regular season is done. It's probably going to be the week of the 26th, but I'm not going to rule out us doing a show next week either. And I apologize for all the confusion about when we're recording and releasing episodes this past few weeks, but it's just kind of gotten crazy just in regular life activities, but also in having trouble with the upload, and also, you know, obviously the disappointment in the current season. So once we hit the off season, we'll have a much more definitive schedule, and hopefully we'll be able to get you these shows in a maybe not more timely, but at least more specific way. So we will be headed out, and we will see you either next week or the following week. And until then, take care.